It's KBIA 91.3 FM and Thinking Out Loud. The State Historical Society of Missouri here in Columbia getting ready to celebrate a significant milestone as they get ready for their 125th year. There will be a lot of events happening around this, including one big one coming up next week, next Tuesday night. Next Tuesday noon, I should say, over at their building here on campus. And joining us to tell us more about it is Gary Kramer, who is the Executive Director of the State Historical Society and past President of the State Historical Society, Bob Pretty. Welcome to you both. Glad to have you guys here today.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Good to be here.
Let me start with you, Gary. This is obviously, it's like any other anniversary. You see it coming from a while now, but this has got to be something you guys have been planning for quite some time.
Sure. May 26th is the actual birthday that marks the 125th anniversary. We'll be having an event next Tuesday, really as part of our regular History on Elm Street events. The event will be at noon, from noon to 1 o'clock, and Bob Pretty and I will be talking about the history of the State Historical Society at this event. We'll also have a 125th birthday anniversary cake, and cool. We invite anybody listening to come over and have a piece of birthday cake.
Bob, every state's going to have a State Historical Society. I just mentioned a little bit of the stuff I remember growing up from the history of Oklahoma that I was taught as a wee lad. And every state talks about how unique their history is, but Missouri is in such an interesting place in crossroads of practically every major historical thing that's happened, whether it's westward expansion, the Civil War. We've got a totally unique role in all of that. So the history of the state of Missouri is a fascinating subject that you've spent a lifetime digging into.
Well, Gary and I both have done that, and we call it the center state because it is the center. There's many states north of us, south of us, many east as west. And you couldn't get to the west without going across Missouri pretty much because of the river. So we had all kinds of people coming through Missouri. Some of them stayed and some of them came in and did their thing and went on west. So we have this incredible variety of immigrants and of people who were emigrating from one part of the country to another. And we have an incredible array of diverse characters in Missouri, all the way from scoundrels to great statesmen. And so digging into that part of our history is something that will keep you going forever and ever and ever because, every day we make some history of some kind in Missouri, but there's just so many different events and so many different characters that it's hard to stay out of the archives that we have and find the ghosts of these people in the boxes over there.
One of the things we discover and become more aware of as a nation as we get a little bit more mature and get through the years is that sometimes those great statesmen and those great scoundrels turned out to be the same person.
Yeah, we had our share of them.
We're talking with Bob Pretty, Gary Kramer from the State Historical Society of Missouri. Gary, what is the origin story of the society that will get to be told over the next few weeks?
The State Historical Society was actually founded by the Missouri Press Association in an effort to preserve newspapers. So it began as a private entity in 1898, and within 2 years was charged by the state legislature with the responsibility of being the State Historical Society of Missouri. Took 2 years to get funding, by the way. We started in 1898. Did not get funding actually until 1891, chartered by the state of Missouri to be the trustee for the people of the state of Missouri for historical records. We started on the campus of University of Missouri. We started in what is now Jesse Hall in the basement. And when the new library, now the old library,
yes,
Ellis was built in 1915, we moved into that. We stayed there for more than a century until we were just very recently able to build a new building, the Center for Missouri Studies. So we've actually moved a couple hundred yards east and then a couple hundred yards north But we've been within just a few hundred yards of Jesse for our entire history.
So walking distance within there. And we had the new director of the museum over there. It's moving into your old space there, Dan Atkin, last week, talking about the process of moving into your old apartment. You guys have this unbelievably beautiful new building, a lot more space, and it gives you the opportunity to do things that wouldn't have been possible when you were down in the east end of Ellis.
Yeah, I think our connection to the University of Missouri is probably one of the most interesting things to me. There were so many people who were closely connected to the University of Missouri in the founding story of the State Historical Society. I suspect if we were trying to do this today, it just wouldn't work. We couldn't pull it off. But at that time, people like Isidore Loeb, who was a faculty member, one of the early historians in a department that really wasn't even a history department, it was political science, advocated for the building. Walter Williams, the father of the J School.
Yeah.
And they were able to access space in Jesse in the basement. And Bob knows this better than I, but a real transformational moment came when the Capitol fire occurred in February 1911. And the university had been trying to build a library for several years, and the legislature would not support it. When the fire occurred, convicts from four or five blocks away at the Missouri State Penitentiary were sent into the burning building to retrieve documents. And ultimately, those documents ended up at the State Historical Society in the basement of Jesse Hall. And that was an embarrassment to the state of Missouri that we didn't have a better place to keep them. And that was actually the nudge the legislature needed to build a new library building in 1915.
As we've gone through time, there's a lot of objects, a lot of information inside the museum with that type of interesting backstory to them. Bob, I understand there's a new statue that spent some time in Washington, D.C. and is now here in Columbia with a similarly interesting backstory.
Yeah, that's one of the newest things we have in our art gallery. It's a statue of Thomas Hart Benton that used to be in Statuary Hall in Washington, D.C. A few years ago, the state decided that Harry Truman should have a statue there. And so they had, but states can only have two statues.
Right.
So they had to decide who's coming back to Missouri or going someplace else. And it was Thomas Hart Benton, our second U.S. Senator. And so we now have this huge statue of Thomas Hart Benton in our art gallery. Now, we don't have the base for the statue with it. It's on its own little base now. But this thing weighed too much for us to bring the whole thing in, didn't it?
Yeah, the statue and the base each weighed about 5,000 pounds.
Oh, my.
And and plus, I think it works better actually without the base. It would be too overwhelming and too tall. But the base is still in our loading dock. It's too big to put on the elevator because the elevator can't it weighs too much for the elevator to handle it. So we're not exactly sure what we're going to do with the base yet. But Tom is ensconced in the gallery, and he looks pretty good.
Yeah, okay. It's a big marble statue, and it's very impressive.
Well, and with his ties to Columbia, if it's not going to be at this U.S. Capitol, mm-hmm. being here is a pretty good backup.
Yeah. We're proud to have him. He mixes in with his, let's see if I have this right, his great-nephew, grandnephew.
A distant relative.
Okay,
yeah.
Thomas Hart Benton, the artist.
Yes.
And so we have a little statue of Tom Benton, the artist, and just a few feet away we have this huge statue of Thomas Hart Benton, the senator. It's a very impressive statue. We invite people to come in. We invite people to come into the building anyway because it's such a magnificent building, and we are so proud of this thing, which is now 4 years old.
We opened on the grand opening was on Missouri Day, August 10th, 2019, the 198th anniversary of statehood. We closed about 6 or 8 months later because of COVID.
Right.
And then reopened in the fall of 2020, and we're pretty much back to normal now.
Okay. We are talking again with Gary Kramer, the executive director, and Bob Priddy, past president of the State Historical Society of Missouri. We have shared a couple of examples. There are so many great stories. Just the fact that there are interesting stories that are fun to hear and interesting to hear is part of the answer to this. But get a little bit deeper with me into why it is important to preserve this history. Why somebody that's 25 years old and lives in Missouri ought to know who Thomas Hart Benton was and see some of these artworks that are related to our state's history and understand how St. Louis became St. Louis, et cetera, et cetera. And I can't think of two better people to dig into that question.
Well, I'll start, and you're right. You're asking the choir here. We're already strong believers in the value of history. Hardly a day goes by. I spent a lot of time in the Capitol representing the State Historical Society during the legislative session, and hardly a day goes by that I'm not reminded of some historical antecedent that I think would bring light and wisdom to a discussion. Dare I say, one of the most basic central themes of Missouri history has been our challenge dealing with race. And that begins in the colonial period, and it's epitomized the challenge of race in the constitutional debate that went on when Missouri was trying to decide whether to come in as a slave or a free state between 1819 and 1821. And ultimately, we came in as a slave state, and I would argue that experience has stayed with us through more than 200 years of our history.
Bob, I was going to try not to get into mentioning my own background, but as he talks about this, the way we look at some of these type issues has changed so dramatically. I took an advanced placement, an AP Oklahoma history class, my senior year of high school, and then took another section of Oklahoma history when I was in college. Clara Looper was never mentioned, the Tulsa Race Massacre. I found out about that years later. Mm-hmm. It was just kind of buried. There was also a very soft sell of what happened to the American Indians there. Are we coming to more of a reckoning of being honest about some of these dark parts of our history?
Sometimes, to be very candid with you, Darren, I think we're backing away from that in some respects. We're seeing efforts made to tell teachers what they can't teach in too many places. And that if the teachers can't teach it, then people can come to the Historical Society and learn on their own. Because we've seen changes in attitudes toward women and minorities and even Native Americans. We can't know where we're going to go if we don't know where we've been, and there's no reason for us to continue to plow the same ground over and over again in terms of human relations. But we seem to operate in cycles, and history teaches us that. And it also teaches us how we've made some progress. But some of this progress, we're always asking, who are we? And
sure.
This is history. Who's acceptable? Native Americans weren't American citizens until 1924. Women couldn't vote until 1920. People could not live wherever they could afford to live until 1968, when fair housing ordinances were passed. So we've been through all of this, and I would think that we would, by studying history, we can learn to get along with each other better than we sometimes do.
I'm going to get even more personal here. I think part of the legal stuff you're talking about that is happening now is based in the idea that it is going to cause people to feel guilt. My roots, my family background is Arkansas, and then before that, Tennessee, Mississippi, Georgia. And as I've done genealogical research, I have seen the last will and testament of a four times great grandfather who is leaving human beings to his kids with the livestock and the kitchen utensils and things like that, and lots of people who fought in the war for the Confederacy, and lots of people who were awarded for their fine service in the military in the cause of Indian relocation. It doesn't make me feel guilty, but it does make me feel responsible to listen and to learn more about exactly what happened, and to make sure that the voices of the people who were negatively affected by that get heard by me and by others, and get witnessed to by me and by others.
Yeah, for me, it's not a question of guilt. I admit that I grew up without an appreciation of history. It was not really until I was a college student that I decided I wanted to be a historian. And there were two things that drove that. One was the Vietnam War. I wanted to understand why that was occurring. And the other was the Civil Rights Movement. I was a student in the days of the burning of Watts in 65 and Detroit and Newark and so forth. So for me, a history became a way of understanding and explaining the world in which I lived. So I teach history not to make people feel badly, but to help them understand the circumstances under which they live today.
You're talking about two events, when it's Vietnam and when it's the Civil Rights Movement, that have remarkable backstories that still echo today.
Sure. We're just 100 yards or so from Peace Park, which was McAllister Park for generations, until in May of 1970, students on the campus of the University of Missouri here were protesting the killing of students at Kent State. And the rally that occurred in what we know as Peace Park today included a demand on the part of students that the peace effort be memorialized by renaming McAllister Park to Peace Park, which is, of course, the name we know it by today.
And I hate to be snotty, but I am going to correct one thing. All of that is exactly true, but I'm going to add three words. And Jackson State.
Yes,
because
you're right.
That one gets, I think, overlooked a lot of times,
yeah.
And that's part of it, too. There is a stone with the names of the young people who were killed at Kent and at Jackson. So,
yeah, you're absolutely right.
And see, I'm older than Gary. I remember the first black basketball player at the University of Missouri,
mm-hmm.
and the first black football players. I remember being in a dormitory here the second semester of my freshman year when our resident advisor came around and introduced two new students who were moving in and down the hall. He was taking them around to all of the rooms because these two guys were black and they were integrating the dormitory. And so I go back that far, and it becomes a personal history, a personal story to me to relate to people. That how much things have changed, and how much I don't want to go back to anything like that ever again.
Bob Pretty and Gary Kramer with us in our closing moments. Gary, I am going to ask you to do the exact opposite of what you are trained to do and what your life is based upon, and that is to talk about the future. 125 years, it's a hell of an accomplishment. What are long-term plans for the State Historical Society? What are we looking to do in the next 5 years, the next 10 years?
Well, I think we've gotten the State Historical Society's Center for Missouri Studies kind of where we want it right now in Columbia. It's a new building, 76,000 square foot building. We've got a great staff. Not that we're going to start neglecting that great staff and that facility, but we're going to focus on our five satellite research centers, St. Louis, Kansas City, Rolla, Springfield, and Cape Girardeau. If we are successful as the House finishes its budget work this week, we will add a full-time staff member at each of those facilities. They'll be open the same hours that we're open. One of the things I've discovered over the years is that Missourians do not want the material that documents their history to leave the region in which they live. So, for example, we opened the Cape Girardeau Center about a decade ago in large part because there were materials in Southeast Missouri that people wanted to give to the State Historical Society, but they didn't want them to leave Southeast Missouri.
And one can understand that.
Sure.
One can understand that. And you're talking about regions with such incredibly different histories. When you're talking about the Boot Heel and what was going on in Southeast Missouri, that's real different from what was happening in Kansas City and how Kansas City came along. Kansas City came along many, many years after St. Louis, and so the evolution there is different. The Ozarks, I know, has its own incredibly interesting history.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, that's understandable. That's understandable, and it's good to have the one center campus, as it were, where you've got, you know, the opportunity for people from anywhere in the state to come in and really see all of that. But I like that there's also that chance for people in the southeastern part of the state to see history that is specific to their region.
I think one of the frontiers we're addressing now is the frontier of digital records. Most of what we have is paper. Tens of thousands of linear feet of paper, but when we took Claire McCaskill's papers, we didn't get any paper. What we got were hard drives, born digital records.
Oh,
we're
wow.
now taking Senator Blunt's papers. There's more paper there because he was in Congress, I think, longer than Senator McCaskill. But still, there's a lot of digital files. So that's our most immediate challenge, is how
sure.
to deal with this digital world of records.
Well, and Claire spent enough time in the state capitol here that there's going to be
yeah.
Some stuff that's really relevant to our state history as well. And two really fascinating characters that are going to be remembered for a long time by historians in our state.
You know, one of the most important things that ever happened for the State Historical Society happened in the 30s, and that was when Kodak invented microfilm.
Oh, yeah.
And so we now have, before digital, we now have 80 million pages, is it?
About 60 million.
60 million pages of newspapers on microfilm. There's no way in the world that we could keep newspapers from 1808 up to now, bound copies. That building wouldn't hold.
Yeah, there's not enough room in the building. Probably not enough room on the whole campus.
But because of microfilm and because we have all of this material on microfilm, people are able to go to newspapers for this foundational item of research. You know, they say newspapers record the first draft of history.
Yes.
Well, so you can find that in these newspapers, and we have it on microfilm, and we can send these microfilm rolls out to our satellite offices in various places. So the challenge is to take history out to people and put it where they can access it instead of saying you have to come to us.
Let me ask one final question of both of you, and I'm going to kind of play off of what Bob just mentioned there, because I've heard that specific saying so often. What we think of as the town newspaper, that's an industry that's having an incredibly difficult time. So many places are losing their news. My hometown has 120,000 people. My hometown's the size of Columbia, and the paper died 3 or 4 years ago. How is the evolution in how people are getting the history of tomorrow as it happens today, as that evolves? How's that going to change what you guys have to do?
I think it is going to change. We're going to have to collect blogs. We're going to have to do more oral history. We just hired a second full-time oral historian, so we're doing a lot more oral histories. But it is a challenge to, it's happening not just in Missouri, not just in Columbia, it's happening all over the country where these small family-owned newspapers are being bought up by big organizations, and in
right.
many cases, they're no longer interested in the local history of the community. It is a challenge. It's a fundamental challenge we face.
My family, my grandparents were born there, is from a pretty small town in the Ozarks, Yellville, Arkansas. And they had a small newspaper there that was around forever. and eventually kind of got swallowed up by the next town over and hasn't been doing much. And it was just bought out. They're moving into the old historic Mountain Echo building. They're back in Yellville and kind of resurrecting the old one. And I think the financial model that's working with them is a whole bunch of people that don't live in Yellville anymore who want to get the newspaper, and that's exactly what they're looking for, is they're looking for the old stories. They want to have that connection to the old home place, and maybe that's a hope for...
You know, in some places, some towns that have lost their newspaper, some people have gotten together, including some of the former employees of the newspaper, and they have put together basically a community news service that is an online equivalent of the local newspaper, so people can find out what the city council did last night. And so that's another challenge for us, is we're going to have to start taking in these materials too, which in effect are substitute newspapers to record this information.
And as somebody employed by the, I'm standing up as I say this, the world's oldest school of journalism, I can get right next to the idea that that is still a very necessary thing. Again, the events are happening at noon, Tuesday, May 9th. Gary, remind me your web address.
It's just shsmo.org.
shsmo.org. Come on out, have some cake, celebrate 125 years of the preservation of the history of our great state, and a strong and vibrant and exciting future. We've been talking with Gary Kramer, Executive Director of the State Historical Society, Bob Priddy, the past President of the Historical Society. I could sit here and do this for hours. Guys, this has been a lot of fun. Thank you very much for being so generous with your time.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks, Darren.